We hope you enjoy this recording of a live broadcast brought to you via the ETIM Network, the online, live, interactive division of Torah in Motion. For more learning opportunities, please visit www.torahinmotion.org.
Okay. Since it is 9 o'clock, I want to welcome you. I want to welcome Rivka and Della and Kenneth, and it's wonderful, and of course Shalom, and thank you for all the trouble that you took, Shalom, in making this shiur possible from a technical standpoint and putting up with my hours. And I am so delighted to be back online, able to share some Torah, and using this shiur as an opportunity to think about important things in advance of Shabbos Kisavo and in advance of Rosh Hashanah. Mirtz Hashem, we look forward to sharing many more such shiurim. We thank Rabbi Jay Kelman for making this entire enterprise of Torah in Motion possible and making it so attractive that it's now been emulated by a number of other places who are providing shiurim of this nature too. The topic of the shiur, the title that I gave was Turning Curses into Blessings, Hafichat Klalot Livrachot. And the fact is that Shabbos Parshas Kisavo is an excellent parsha in which to discuss this theme, because there is a long-standing tradition of taking the klalos of the Tochacha and turning them into blessings. The source of the tradition regarding the Tochacha may actually originate in the Zohar, and it particularly finds emphasis in the Hasidic tradition. And I'll give you a few examples. First of all, on the Pasuk, V'hayu chayecha tlu'im lecha mineged, where the Pasuk says that your life will be suspended before you, that you're going to be afraid morning and night, and you're never going to know a moment of security, which sounds like the most difficult curse that you can imagine. So the Degel Machane Ephraim is quoted as trying to convert that into a bracha by saying that if your life is always considered suspended before you, but not your life, but the source of your life. If Hashem is always in your mind's eye, standing before you, in the spirit of Shiviti Hashem Nagdi Tamid, I place God before me always, well then, as the Pasuk goes on, Ufachareta Laila Vayom, then you will be God-fearing day and night, and you will be sure not to sin. So from the ultimate in curse comes a suggestion of blessing through Shivisi Hashem L'Negdi Tamid. In the same spirit, the Pasuk says, Uvagoyim Hahem Lo Targia, implying that even after we were forced into exile, we won't find a moment's rest, even in the land of our dispersion, of our exile. Seems to be saying that it's not bad enough that we were put into exile, we're going to be miserable in exile as well. And they call out to Yair, who is calling in from Cambridge, Massachusetts. It's a pleasure to have you online. I didn't rig that, and we have total coincidence that we have the same last name. So on that curse that you won't find a moment's peace even in the land of your enemies, Rab Chaim Meir of Vizhnitz writes that that's actually a blessing. It's a blessing that you're going to go into Galut, you're going to be exposed to other peoples and other cultures. The little girl waving hello to her brother from behind me has no relation, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Okay, so even though you're in Galut, the blessing is that you'll never feel comfortable in Galut. You'll never feel comfortable among the other nations. You'll only feel comfortable among your own. You'll always desire to go back to the land of Israel, and you'll always feel most comfortable among your own co-religionists, as if to say it's a hedge against the dangers of assimilation. So, a bracha rested from the claws of klala. And if you're interested in the mathematical side of converting the klalot of the tochacha into brachot, so there is a Dvar Torah that's quoted from Rav Meir of Premishlan, great Hasidic Rebbe, who points out, and I haven't counted them, you'll have to check this up yourself, he says that in the entire tochacha, there are 676 words. And he says that the word number 676 in Gematria comes out to the word ra'ot, evil things. But it also so happens that the number 676 is a square. It's a perfect square of the number 26. And 26 happens to be the Gematria equivalent of the Shem Havaya, of the name of God, Yud Kei Vav Kei. So he says, now if you take all of that, you can infuse a new meaning into the pasuk that says, Rabot ra'ot la tzadik, there are many ra'ot that happen to the tzadik, umikulam yatzilenu Hashem, but Hashem will save him from them all. So here it takes the entire tochacha as represented by 676, and it converts it into the highest form of kedusha, Hashem squared. So that's the ultimate in the conversion of the klalot of the tochacha into brachot. Finally, within the tochacha itself, there is a story that is told concerning the second Rebbe of Lubavitch, Rav Dov Ber, who is known as the Mittler Rebbe, because he was the middle of the first three generations of Lubavitch. So he once found himself on the road in an unaccustomed fashion. He was away from home on the Shabbos that Kisavo was read. And so he found himself in a different shul, and they were reading the Parsha. And in the midst of the Tochacha, he faints dead away. And they wake him up, and why did he faint? He fainted because of the terrible curses of the Tochacha. And they said, but haven't you heard these before? And he said, whenever he heard his father reading the Tochacha, his father was the Baal HaTanya of Shneur Zalman of Ladi, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. Whenever he heard his father reading them, he only heard brachot. He never heard klalot. This was the first time in his life that he actually heard the Tochacha. And that seems to imply that there is, on some level, the idea that the klalot can really be seen as brachot. I'd like to point out, though, that this idea of turning a pasuk that is a curse into a blessing is not an invention of the Zohar, and it's not an invention of Hasidic Rebbeim, and it's not Shalashuddas Torah. It's actually rooted in a famous Gemara in Masechet Brachot, and it's also rooted in a well-known practice which is done on certain occasions. The Gemara talks about the pasuk that says, Nafla lo tosif kum betulat Yisrael. She has fallen, and she will not get up. This is not an advertisement for the necklace pendant for senior citizens. She has fallen, and she will not rise again, the betulah of Yisrael. And the Gemara says, you can read it differently. You can read it, Nafla lo tosif kum betulat Yisrael. She has fallen, but she will fall no longer. Arise, O Betulat Yisrael. So the Gemara already has the roots of this idea of reading a klala into a bracha, of somehow turning it into bracha through the reading of it in a careful way. And I think that that's also related to the practice of hatavat chalom, that when a person has a bad dream and is really troubled by it, so one of the things he may choose to do is fast a ta'anit chalom. It's not done so much anymore, but the concept exists. It's on the books, and there's discussion. What do you do if it's on a Shabbos? You're not supposed to fast on a Shabbos, but you have to fast right after you had the dream. So you fast, but then because you fasted on Shabbos, you have to fast another fast day to make up for the fast day that you weren't supposed to fast, but you fasted anyway. Fine. But there's also the idea of reciting a certain formula that changes the chalom into something good, and trying to give it a good interpretation. You could see this as part of the special rules governing dreams, that in dreams, the Gemara says at one point in Masechet Brachot, and towards the end, that Hakol Holech Achar HaPeh, or Achar HaPitaron, the dreams follow the interpretation. The dreams are somehow fluid, they are lend themselves to more than one type of interpretation, and if you interpret it in a positive fashion, you can make it go in that direction. Or you can say that it's also part of the larger phenomenon of being able, through your speech, to change reality, to change curses into blessings. And of course, I think that the av l'kulam, the idea par excellence of converting curses to blessings, we find in the Torah itself, because that language is used for the way in which Hashem dealt with Bil'am. That Hashem did not want, he didn't allow Bil'am to curse the Jews. Vayahafoch Hashem Elokecha lecha et habracha leklala, ki ahevcha Hashem Elokecha. Out of his great love for you, Hashem converted, he reversed the curses into blessings, because he wanted them to take effect in that way. And in fact, on the night, on Motzei Shabbos, when we say all of the psukim of the Yiten Lecha, there are different sections within those psukim. And the section in which that pasuk appears is called the Hafichot. There are several psukim there which deal with the way that bad fortune can be converted into good fortune and curses into blessings. And I was wondering that perhaps this very idea is also hinted at in one of the mottos of this Shabbat, in explaining why we read the blessings and the curses on the Shabbat preceding, very close to Rosh Hashanah, not exactly preceding, but close to. The Gemara says the famous play on words, because Tichle Shana v'kilaloteha, Tachel Shana uvirchoteha. Let the old year with its curses end, and let the new year with its blessings begin. But the Gemara purposely chose a play on words which has similar sounds, similar verbs, Tichle and Tachel. The guttural sound, the chaf, the chet, and then the lamed sound. And maybe the idea is that it's not sufficient, as far as the Gemara is concerned, to simply bring in a year with brachot. It's more important that the brachot should emanate from what seemed at one time to be curses. The curses should prove to be the source of blessing. And it seems like what the pasuk says in Kohelet, and is played upon by the Baal HaTanya, that it talks about Yitron Ha'or Min HaChoshech, the primacy or the benefit, the advantage of light over darkness. That's the standard translation. Ki Yitron Ha'or Min HaChoshech. Min is translated as over, the advantage of light over darkness. But Min has another translation, and that is from, emanating from, that there is such a thing as the wondrous effect of light, specifically when it emanates out of darkness. When you started with darkness and you started with a curse, and from that curse ultimately emanates the bracha, it is shown to its greatest advantage and its most brilliant effect. I was wondering whether you could give a homespun example, and that is that sometimes it is force which is heading in one direction which lends itself, provides the energy for the reversal, for its own reversal, to be even more powerful. When a pitcher throws a 96 mile an hour fastball, the faster he throws, the faster a good hitter will end up rifling it into the seats for a home run, because the home run takes advantage of the initial speed at which the pitch was thrown. So if you have something which is a powerful klala and it's converted into a bracha, that bracha will be all the more powerful because of what the power invested in the curse in the first place. And maybe, just maybe, what we are being told with all of these examples is that it's our responsibility, it's our job, to take the mantle of God upon our own shoulders. And just as he took the curse of Bil'am HaRasha and turned it miklala levracha, it's our job to convert klalot to brachot in Parshat Ki Tavo and in our daily lives. And then, of course, the question is, how do you do that? And it's too large a question to deal with in one shi'ur, but I'm just going to suggest a couple of ways and a couple of examples within those ways. I think there might be two general approaches to how you can take a klala and convert it to a bracha. One is by changing your viewpoint and by perceiving the truth that the klala was never a klala, it really was a bracha. It's as if the klala were an optical illusion. We only thought it was a klala. What would an example be? So in the world of Hasidic stories, there's a famous story that's told concerning the Rebbe Reb Zusha. It seems that a fellow came to the Rebbe Reb Zusha's teacher, the Mizritcher Magid, and said to him, "I have a Gemara that I don't understand." The Gemara is commenting on the statement of the Mishnah in Brachot that Kishem shechayav adam levarech al hatova, kach chayav levarech al hara'a. Just the same as you make a bracha on good things, hatova hametiv, so too you make a bracha on bad things, you make dayan ha'emet. And the Gemara says that the word kishem is such an equal sign, it's such a comparison, that the two are supposed to be really identical. So how, he asked, how are you supposed to do kishem when it comes to being mevarech al hara'a? And the Gemara answers that it has to be accepted b'simcha, l'kabule b'simcha. So this fellow came to the Mizritcher Magid and he said, "I don't get that Gemara. I understand what it's doing, but I don't understand how can you take something which is so bad and experience it with the same joy with which you experienced an overt joyous occasion over which you would make hatova hametiv, the birth of a child, for example." And so the Mizritcher Magid said, "If you want the answer to that, you have to go visit my student Reb Zusha." So the fellow went to visit Reb Zusha. He went to the city of Anapoli, knocked on the door, and Mrs. Reb Zusha comes to the door, Zushet, and she takes one look at her, and she's dressed very meagerly in terms of the riches, material that of the clothing she's wearing, and the kids are basically in rags, and the house is pretty destitute. The whole place is ramshackle. It looks like Reb Zusha is living in utter poverty. And when she hears that he wants to speak to her husband, she goes and she calls her husband, who comes and is dressed no better than his wife and no better than his children. And he asks, "What are you here for?" And when he hears why the fellow was there, he says, "I don't get it. I don't understand why my teacher sent you to me. If he wanted somebody to teach you how to accept bad things, he really should have sent you to someone who has experienced bad things. Nothing bad has ever happened to me." And so that's Reb Zusha. Reb Zusha could take a look at all of the things of the poverty and the tragedies that befall himself and can see only good. Most of us are not Reb Zusha. And we're not even going to be asked after 120 years, why weren't you Zusha? As the famous story goes, because we weren't Zusha. We're not Zusha. We try to learn from Zusha. For most people, this type of realization comes retroactively. When we look back at our lives, we can sometimes realize, well, now I understand that it's a good thing that I didn't get that job. Because if I had gotten that job, I can see what would have happened, and I would never have had the opportunity that I'm experiencing now. Or, now I can see it's a good thing that the girl that I wanted to marry way back when didn't work out, because if it had, then I wouldn't have married the person I did marry, I wouldn't have the children that I do have, and so forth. We are usually blessed in some way over the course of our lives that there are some of these events that we can parse in retrospect. And our challenge is to somehow from those times make what we would call in Talmudic terms a binyanav, use them as the example that proves the rule that even when we don't understand why something is litova, why something is really a bracha, that it is, even if we don't perceive it as such. But there is another way that one could interpret the idea of turning a klala into a bracha. Because there are some klalot that we are not able to reinterpret and reframe as a bracha. That's very hard work, and if you're honest about it, it doesn't work all the time. At least not at our level of our madrega. But sometimes we have to admit that the klala is really a klala. But that room has been left for us to become a partner to Hashem in the act of sweetening the judgment, in the act of turning this klala into a bracha. And the example that came to my mind is the way Jews need to react now to their brethren, Jewish and non-Jewish, who have been affected by Hurricane Ike in Texas and Louisiana. I spoke briefly to Rabbi Barry Gilman, who used to be the associate rabbi in the Hebrew Institute of Riverdale, and is now the rabbi of a large shul in Houston, Texas. And Rabbi Gelman was telling me what the situation was like. He wrote into the RCA's listserv, seems that the roof from their shul was partially ripped off by the storm. The sanctuary got flooded. Fortunately, the sforim had been moved and the Sifrei Torah to high ground. 60% of the population had no power. Most of the Jewish families, because of the lack of power, had moved in with other families. And the food situation was not terribly good. They were importing food for Shabbos this week. And so they were accepting donations for people to help defray the cost. And so this is a situation where one does not look at this and say, you know, this is a good thing because it's going to make them stronger. One is never matzdik v'din. One never justifies a thing like that when it happens to somebody else. If you can say about your own tzoros, well, it's not a klala, it's a bracha, and here's why, that's wonderful. Great if we can do it. But we never do that to the tzoros that happen to other people. There is a beautiful Dvar Torah that I saw in the name of Rav Soloveitchik and also in the name of Rav Nachum Rabinovich from Yeshivat Ma'alei Adumim, and it talks about Moshe's refusal to accept the revelations that God was willing to give him. Moshe, at the burning bush, hides his face from God. And there are varying interpretations in the Gemara, also in Brachos, as to why Moshe hid his face. Vayaster Moshe panav, ki arei mehabit el ha'elokim. He hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. So one interpretation says that because he hid his face there and he refused God's revelation, Later, when he asked God, Hodieni na et rachecha, tell me how you run your world. Why do bad things happen to good people? Hashem refused to tell him. It's like one of those plays where in the first act, he wants and she doesn't. And in the second act, she wants and he doesn't. And in the third act, finally they both want and the curtain goes down. So here, first, Hashem wanted to reveal himself to Moshe. Moshe didn't want. In the second act, Moshe wants Hashem to reveal his ways, and Hashem doesn't want. The third act we're not sure about. But the other interpretation of this Gemara sees it as a positive thing that Moshe hid his face. Why didn't Moshe want Hashem to reveal himself? So Rav Soloveitchik suggested that the revelation of God's motives would be a gain in his intellectual understanding of the way the world runs, but it would be a total loss of empathy with the people who suffer. If I can see clearly how it's part of God's larger plan, it's much more tempting to say, well, those people, yeah, they're feeling, they're suffering, but it's all for a greater cause. It all will be okay in the end. And that's not what a Jew is supposed to say. A Jew might believe in general, philosophically, that everything is for a reason, but we are not matzdik the din on other people. When it comes to other people, we sacrifice our own understanding for the sake of empathizing with their tzarot. So Moshe refused the revelation so that he could keep his empathy. Well, so what we need to do for people like those in Houston is try to work together with Hashem, he on his level and we on ours, to alleviate the situation, to, by dint of hard work, by dint of investment of resources, of spiritual and financial resources, to help people who are in trouble and to convert their klalot into brachot. And it occurred to me as well that sometimes it is possible that when we work really hard to turn a klala into a bracha, so then this category turns into the first one. We sometimes can reveal to ourselves that what we had no choice originally but to view as a klala was in fact a bracha. Only we couldn't see it, that it for the bracha that it was until we invested all of that energy and we turned it into a bracha. And the example that I give is from a secular source. You can't get more secular than Sports Illustrated. Sports Illustrated recently had an issue which had a feature, Where Are They Now? Famous figures in sports. And what are they doing now? And one of the people that they featured was Jim Abbott. But, yeah, do you remember Jim Abbott? Jim Abbott was a one-handed Major League Baseball pitcher. He somehow managed when he pitched to quickly switch his glove from one arm to the other in order to be able to do all of the things he had to do. This Jim Abbott won a gold medal for the United States in the Olympics, and then he was with the Angels and the Yankees and the Brewers, and he actually pitched a no-hitter for the Yankees. And unlike some of the other people that they profile, who really went down the tubes and or defined success in their terms, Jim Abbott is now 40 years old. He's retired, and he's working with kids, and he's going around speaking about how it's possible to take a disability and turn it into a source for growth. And he encourages people with disabilities to be able to take advantage of everything that life has given them. And there are people who simply were encouraged to have a new lease on life and to recover from debilitating injuries and from very difficult circumstances by his example and by his personal touch. So this is a person who had something that you cannot do anything but classify as a klala. And yet what he did with it, not only did he turn it from a klala into a bracha, it became such a bracha for himself and for others that you have to wonder, can you still classify it as a klala in the first place? Or maybe it was really a bracha just waiting to happen. And so, this is the theme of the evening. And I would just like to conclude by wishing you and all of Klal Yisrael that for the year Tavshin Samach Tes, we should be zoche to be able to see blessings even in ostensible curses. And we should also merit to work as hard as we have to and as hard as we can to convert those things that really do seem to be curses, and maybe they are, the rest of those curses into brachot as full-fledged partners to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Ma'aseh Bereishit. And that is what I prepared for this evening. I apologize, it seems a little bit shorter than I had thought it was in the preparation. So I'll take my wife's advice and I'll say this is the time for questions. Anyway, thank you so much for listening and for coming and sharing this pre-Rosh Hashanah experience together. And that was my daughter Bracha. Thank you. By the way, Yair, I'll just mention to you that when you get home, you have to come home soon because I just got this from Amazon. It is a new volume by Mark Shapiro entitled Studies in Maimonides and His Interpreters. And it includes essays such as Maimonidean Halacha and Superstition, traditional and academic perspectives on Rambam and principles of interpretation in the Rambam, and you'll enjoy it. And and my daughter is trying to sneak into the picture. Okay, so a ketiva v'chatima to everybody and to all of the Hochbergs, and to David and to Kenneth and to Moshe and to Rivka and to Brachala and you're very welcome. And a little bit of homework. I think there has to be more to say about the roots of the idea of why bracha needs to come especially from klala, and why Hashem insisted that the bracha that should come upon Bnei Yisrael in the Midbar should specifically be rooted in the klalot that Bil'am said. Something about those klalot that ultimately led to the best brachot and some of the purest Torah. The Gemara says that Moshe Rabbeinu katav sifro uparshat Bil'am. That Moshe wrote the Torah and he wrote Parshas Bil'am also. Even though obviously if he wrote the whole Torah, he also wrote Parshas Bil'am. That somehow Parshas Bil'am is put on par with the exquisite level of the Torah of Moshe. And that remains for exploration for the future. Okay, oh, this is a good picture. Okay. You realize that they're going to be selling this on the website. And everybody's going to be wondering what's happening now. They're not going to know that my daughter is poking her head into the picture in order to say hello to her brother in Cambridge. That they're not going to realize. Okay. So I'm going to sign off now. And Yair, I still have to make you the recording we spoke about. And best regards to everybody for L'shana Tova Tikatvu V'Techatmu L'Alter L'Chayim Tovim L'Shalom K'siva V'Chasim Atova to everybody. And may this year be sweet and secure and blessed, and the epitome of the conversion of all perceived klalot to brachot. And a good night to all.
We hope you found this recording a most enjoyable learning experience. We welcome your feedback. Please contact us at info@torahinmotion.org or at www.torahinmotion.org. Have a great day. Thank you.